Welcome to Peloton, where change is a six-letter word that starts with you. But don't just be the change you wish to see. Work at it, run at it, lift at it, and even keep at it. With Peloton's all-access membership, you don't ever have to dip out on a workout unless you're squatting. Track your progress, set pace targets, and if you're ready to lift, download the Peloton Strength Plus app.
Okay, this is the fun part.
This is fitness, but personal. So see you on the Peloton tread at onepeloton.com. Find your push, find your power, Peloton.
Welcome back to Listen to Your Heart. I'm Jerry.
And I'm Jerry's Heart.
Today's topic, Repatha, Evolocumab. Heart, why'd you pick this one?
Well, Jerry, for people who have had a heart attack, like us, diet and exercise might not be enough to lower the risk of another one.
Okay.
To help know if we're at risk, we should be getting our LDL-C, our bad cholesterol, checked, and talking to our doctor.
I'm listening.
And if it's still too high, Repatha can be added to a statin to lower our LDL-C and our heart attack risk.
Guess it's time to ask about Repatha.
Do not take Repatha if you're allergic to it. Serious allergic reactions can occur. Get medical help right away if you have trouble breathing or swallowing, swelling of the face, lips, tongue, throat, or arms. Common side effects include runny nose, sore throat, common cold symptoms, flu or flu-like symptoms, back pain, high blood sugar, and redness, pain, or bruising at the injection site.
Listen to your heart.
Ask your doctor about Repatha. Learn more at Repatha.com or call 1-844-REPATHA.
Yeah, but Liverpool were always going to look for further reinforcements. They're not going to go into the season with just one right back. They'll want lots of options everywhere.
Join in the obsession.
Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
Nico was, I wouldn't say that he was the father figure I never had, but I worshipped the ground that he stood on, you know. And people will ask me, well, what was so special about Nico? He was a man who gave me belief, he filled you with confidence, and he gave you a chance.
He had this magic throw. He never had a lot of, you know, manuals or anything like that. It was all coming out of the head, and he had a great belief in what he was called the wire-to-wire across the field in Killarney. Touch the wire on both ends, who gets there first? And it was nearly always a defender, but he was a great manager.
Well, let's talk about your early years in football. You were on the Kerry minor team. Tell us about your local club and how you first, you know, the dream of being a Kerry football. Was it something from knee-high to a grasshopper, or how did it develop?
Well, I suppose from the day I got out of the cradle, it was an ambition of mine, and I suppose most Kerry young fellas, when they get out of the cradle, the thing to do is think about playing for Kerry at some stage. So I was so lucky in Waterville that a teacher by the name of Sean McCarthy came back to Waterville. He came back from Dublin. He was teaching in Dublin and came back to St. Finian's National School, and he was the man that encouraged me in a big, big way. And I suppose it was because of him that I got on the Kerry minor team. He was a delegate to the county board at the time. Very few players from the South Kerry area where I came from had been on teams for Kerry previous to that. So he went into the county board and he fought the case for me, and he got me on the Kerry minor team in 1954. And in 1954, believe it or not, I scored a goal in 7 pints down in Kinmare in a replay against Waterford. And the next game, of course, was the Munster final. And I can assure you, I was dropped for that, would you believe it? And I was only, what, 18 or 19th on the list. But it's amazing, from there on, I was going back on the list all the time. And by the time we got to the All-Ireland final in 1954, I was an unofficial sub. They brought me to Croke Park, and I was in my Sunday suit, as Owen McCrohan used to say one time. And I was in my Sunday suit, but I still continued anyway. A lot of people said to me, it might could have been the end for me, but I went back home to Waterville and was more determined actually to get back on the Kerry team again, and I got on the junior team the following year, and then it's history and went on from there.
And let's just talk about your playing days then. You won your first senior medal, was it in 57?
No, in 1959.
59.
I got on there.
Played senior football from 57 on, did you?
I did, 1956. 56. I played against Carlow and Tralee in the National League. And from 56 on, I played until March of 1974. Played for 18 years for Kerry.
What number was on your back?
Number 7 for about 9 years, wing half back, which I enjoyed playing. Of course, I think it's a wonderful position to play. You're facing the ball all the time and you can express yourself quite a bit there. But then as the years went by, they moved me to the 40 yards and then they moved me then to full forward. And then I finished my career playing as a corner forward for Kerry.
And some of the legends that were on that team?
Well, there were so many of them, if you know, so many. There was
Mick O'Connell.
You had Mick O'Connell in the middle of the field, and you had Seamus Murphy in the middle of the field. I played with Tiggy Lyne and Paddy Sheehy and Kevin Coffey, Niall Sheehy, Sean Oak Sheehy, all these fellas, all good players.
And if you were to look back on your playing days, best team you were on, best players, most memorable match, what were the real highlights of your playing days?
Well, I suppose I was on a team in between 1968 and 72, which was an exceptionally good team. Great players on that team. You had Mick Gleeson, you had Liam Higgins, and you had, as you said, Mick O'Connell and Seamus Murphy in around the middle of the field. They were wonderful footballers. Kevin Coffey was another marvellous player. But I mean, I suppose that's where I established myself around that period. But the game, of course, has revolved and has changed so much in the meantime. In that period, there was a system by Dr. Eamon O'Sullivan. You had 15 sectors on the field, and when you got the ball in the sector that you were supposed to be playing in, you caught it and you put down your head and you kicked it as far as you possibly could, and where it was landing, there should be another player to win it in that sector. And that was the system that worked well for Kerry for about 50 years and won many All-Irelands with it. But I suppose if you had big men in every sector of the field today, you could nearly try that one again.
Yes, and we'll talk about the change again. But one thing that hasn't changed is there's an old rule of thumb that in each decade, Kerry are supposed to win 3 All-Irelands. Isn't that true? Why is it that Kerry have such extraordinary success? Is it because in senior football, is it because it's almost, you know, you're not a hurling county so much and there's it's a single track focus on one sport? Or is it that there's damn all else to do in Kerry? Or what is it that makes it just, you know, synonymous between Kerry success and football?
Well, I suppose along the Western Seacoast for years, there wasn't too much to be done, to be very honest. The natural thing for me when I was growing up was to go to the field every evening of the week and kick footballs. And I suppose that is where you develop your skills more than any other thing, as you know yourself. And all players in Kerry always seem to have those great skills. I suppose you saw yesterday one of the greatest displays that you've seen in Croke Park from any long day from the Gooch Cooper. Mm. There's a player, I'd say, that never left a football out of his hand, I'd say, for years. And the same applies throughout Kerry. But I think it's the structures that they have set up in Kerry. It's all about hard work.
Those club structures?
A great club structure there. And then you have the divisional boards. Where I come from in South Kerry, there are 9 clubs, and we pick one team out of the 9 clubs to play in the Senior County Championship in Kerry, which raises the standard, actually, of our football in Kerry. And I think it's a big, big plus.
At 9:16 on Monday's News Talk Breakfast, Kerry and GAA legend Mick O'Dwyer is our profile interview this morning. And Mick, I was interested when Ivan asked you about the best team you'd ever played with and the years you gave there, because your 4 All-Irelands as a player, 1959 and 1962, they were the first two in the bag. And then let's go to 1966. How'd you break both your legs in the same year?
Yeah, well, I was playing against UCC out in Sneem in a tournament game actually in early January, I think the 6th of January, and I managed to break the fibula of my left leg. And then the same thing happened again in May when I came back, the same thing happened.
So on your right leg?
On my right leg, so left and right, broke both of them actually. But then I got checked up by Dr. Eamon O'Sullivan at the time, and he told me that I was lacking calcium in my system, so he put me on a course of calcium tablets or whatever it was at the time, made all the difference. And after that, I never had any problems anymore, which was amazing. I got back to play against Cavan in the All-Ireland semi-final.
Later that summer. So within 8 months of breaking both legs, you were back playing in a semi.
Exactly, yeah. But I don't think I should have been selected, to be very honest. I wasn't selected at the time, so I was in the inside track, and I suppose I was able to put myself down on the team when we generally met.
Right, because the reason I asked you is in your answer to Ivan, you said you named the years after that as you know, the great teams that you played with, and really things for others would have stopped there with breaking both legs in the same year. You went on to get another two All-Ireland.
That's right. I suppose in my playing career I played in 9 All-Ireland finals and a replay which would make it 10, and we only won 4, which would be a bad record in Kerry, as you know yourself. But it was amazing. We had wonderful success in the league. I played in 9 league finals and we won 8 of them actually. So that was a big pressure on Kerry players at that period to play well in leagues and do well in leagues, because there was a big revenue to come back to the county board out of the gates at that period. And as you know, county boards were struggling at the period, and it was most important that we did well in those leagues.
Well, let's talk about managing. Let's talk about the move into managing, because obviously huge success as a player doesn't guarantee huge success as a manager. And how did you make the transition? How did you cross in?
Well, I suppose I grew up in Waterville, where you were a very, very small population. We'd have about 300 or 400 people in the little village of Waterville and surrounding areas. There's another team in the parish as well, Drummond Pierce's, where Jack O'Connor comes from, and Declan O'Sullivan, who's playing for Kerry, comes from that club as well. So we come from a small parish, you know. So when I grew up in Waterville and when I got on the Kerry team, the reins was handed over to me to manage and coach Waterville. So we went from being a very, very small junior club in Waterville to, we went to 3 senior county finals. So I suppose the chairman of the Kerry County Board, Gerald McKenna, who was the chairman at the time, I suppose he must have seen something in me, and he was the man that got me to manage Kerry in that period. He got me, first of all, to do the under 21 team in 1974, and then he decided that it was time that I could take over the under 21 team in 75 and the senior team, and we won both All Irelands that year. So I suppose we went down from there.
So the senior team, the record is 10 finals, 8 of them in the bag for you. Decent record.
Well, not too bad, I suppose.
Not too shabby at all.
Well, not too shabby, yeah.
Do you still remember the two that got away?
Yeah, I do. Well, Sean Murphy scored a goal in the dying seconds in Cork in the Munster final. I think it was in 1983. And then in 1982, sure, I mean, everybody know about that one. We were going for 5 in a row, and Seamus Darby put the ball in the net in the dying seconds as well. So we were beaten in both of those years just by a pint. We could quite easily have won 9 All-Ireland titles in a row at that period. So that will tell you the team that I had and the class players that I had. They were unbelievable.
What's the secret to managing? Is it scream at them? Is it have them afraid of you? Is it to be friends with them? Is it never smile? What's the secret? What's your secret?
No, I wouldn't think so. I think it's all about man management, because every player on a team is different. So you have to go through the team and you have to see what the team is made up of. And you have to treat most players differently, as you know, as the years go on. But I learned, and I was very lucky. I brought most of the 74 under 21 team onto the senior team in 75. I had a very, very young team. I think there was about 8 or 9 of them played on the under 21 team in 74 that won in 75. So there I had a team for about 12 years, so I had no problem to look for players anymore.
Okay, at 9:21, Mick O'Dwyer is our profile interview this Monday on News Talk Breakfast.
There's a legend told about you, Mick, in relation to motivation and man management, and tell me if it's true, that just, you know, just before the match starts, and maybe in the dressing room, that you see Mick going around to them individually, and he says to Pat, and he says to Barry, and he says to John, look, don't mind these other guys, you're the guy I'm really depending on today. But you say it to all of them individually. What is it that makes you get the best out of man motivation? Like you do have this bond with your players, and we've seen it in Wicklow, we've seen it in Kildare. You do get an extra performance out of them. How do you do it?
Well, I suppose, as I said a minute ago, it's all, as you said, about man management. I mean, you have to treat every individual as they come along. They're all different and they all think differently. So you have to talk to them and you have to find out exactly what their background is, if they have got a job, if they're happy in life, it's most important. And if they haven't got a job, I mean, that's a disaster. So the most important thing for any manager, first and foremost, is to try and get work for their players. I think that's most important. And that's something that GA will have to look at now more than ever before. But that would be part and parcel of it, yes. But as you said there a minute ago, in the dressing room, before we would get to the dressing room in the hotel, I would nearly speak to all the players individually, and I'd tell them their strong points, and I would tell them, as you said, that they were going to be the player that could win the game for us today. And I suppose that would motivate them, all right.
And so you do the one-to-one psychology?
Oh, yes. But I mean, that's the way to do it. I mean, you can't take 15 players going on a pitch. They're all of different makeup, different characters, and you have to talk to them individually, and you know, I would know their strong points, and I would work on that then and tell them exactly, you know, the last day now you've got 3 points, we'd be hoping you'd get 4 or 5 today. And if you're in a situation near the goal at any stage, bang, go for a score, whether it's over the bar or whether it's wide or whatever, but be confident about it at all times and be willing. But I mean, in training, we practiced. My system generally is plenty football, and you can beat it.
And develop the skills. But just say now, like we often hear of Alex Ferguson, and he gives them the hairdryer treatment. So say you're managing a team, and they just, either they were cocksure they're going to win, they're complacent, they put in a desperate performance. You bring them in at half time. What style would you deploy? Would you really roast them, or what would you do?
No, I never would, to be very honest. When they come into the dressing room, generally with me, I would ask them all to sit down in the dressing room, and then I would go around individually and have a chat with them as I go around the dressing room. But generally, you don't have to talk to players. I mean, when you motivate them properly and have them going well, if there's a player doing badly, you could go to them and talk to them individually. But that's about the size of it. But in my earlier days, I was a great man to use the Lucas Aid bottle on the table and all that type of stuff. You know, a bit of temper and you motivate them and get them going. But that has changed as the years have gone on. So,
because I myself did the celebrity banish tour and all the things about, you know, the pride of the club and the heart and the
very, very important, I can assure you, because it's all about pride. But you don't, with Kerry players, you don't have to motivate them that much. They really know what's ahead of them.
But I'm talking about Kildare and Laois and Wicklow.
Yes, well, that was a different situation, to be very honest, because they were all in the doldrums when I went to those counties. And I suppose, yes.
How did you approach it?
Well, when I went to Wicklow, I suppose that was the last team that I was with. I got 120. I called in 120 players. They all arrived, and I spoke to each and every one of them. So I had to run trials and all that type of stuff, and I told them then exactly what was required. But I think in those counties, the reason they're not doing that well, they're not working hard enough for their game. They're not training hard enough, and that's as simple as that. I think most of
get super fit,
which is most important. I think most of the teams in the country are not where they should be in fitness. That's my personal opinion.
That is fascinating, because the big improvement over the last 20 years has been, look at the Dublin team, they're really super fit.
Yeah, but you don't have any problem, you see, with the Kerrys, the Dublins, the Corks, as I said, and the Mayos and the Galways, it's the weaker counties. What generally happens here, they say to themselves early in the year, have we got a chance of achieving something? And, you know, they think negatively, which is wrong.
And on the other side of all this is the county board. Like, I'm sure if you're coming to County X, you want to know what resources are going to be there in terms of training, in terms of nutrition, in terms of physios and all that. Like, is that one of the factors that would decide whether you go to a county? What sort of financial resources the county board are going to put into this? Is that a factor?
Well, that is a factor. Of course it is today. Without money, you can't do anything, as you know yourself, because as you said there a minute ago, you need doctors, you need physiotherapists, you need all those people involved in a team, which are very, very important. So, as you know yourself, money is most important. There's no question or doubt about it.
You're speaking my language, but wait till I tell you, Mikko. I have a view about this now, because now Christy Cooney made a very strong speech, and as you know, at Croke Park have come out really against, a fatwa against paying managers. My attitude is this. If you actually want to help the weaker counties, the best way to do it is to get professional managers in. What is your whole, and you've mentioned elite players getting a few bob as well, and getting jobs and so on. Surely there's an element of kind of dishonesty about this, that surely in a modern day where everyone's time is worth money, we should have an open attitude and a more commercial attitude like other sports. I have rugby, soccer, to paying managers.
Well, I mean, Mr. Cooney, it's delighted to hear you talking about that man, I can assure you. I mean, he's on a pretty good salary from the association. I don't have to tell you that. So, I mean, the one thing about, I wouldn't like to see the game becoming a full-time professional game. I don't think we could possibly maintain it. But certainly players should be seen after better than they are being done. I mean, giving a player 50 cents a mile to come into training, a young married man with maybe a mortgage on a house and what have you and all that. I have recommended over the years that players should be financially seen after championship games as the year go on, and also maybe give them a euro a mile. I wouldn't see anything wrong with that. There's plenty of money being made in gates around the country and what have you. I mean, we have so many officials being paid at the present time, and the only people that are not being paid are players. But that players don't want to be paid. I never did. I never even thought about money when I was playing for Kerry. I was playing for the pride of my club, pride of my county, which I think is most important above all. But the only thing I would like to see, certainly to see after players better than we're doing at the present time.
Well, there's a listener wants to give out to me. Mark, Dublin 12. Ivan, quit the bull and ask Mick, has he ever been paid as an inter-county manager outside of Kerry?
I've never been actually paid a salary. No way. I've got good expenses, and that's all I have ever got in Kildare.
But you're entitled to him, I believe.
Which I'm entitled. Yeah. I mean, if I drive from Waterville to Kildare to train, say, three nights a week.
Lose the whole day. And then go back that night.
Well, it certainly is. So, I mean, that's all I ever got, and I never look for any more. I never look for a salary in my life for playing football. Thank God I have enough
to
deliver.
And as your wife will testify, you'd stop and pull in at a club match anywhere and look at it, even if you had no involvement.
Which you have done over the years. I mean, I love the game. I love to be involved in the game. And when I finished with Kerry, I mean, I had no intention in the world of going back into management, to be very, very honest. And I can assure you, when I was in Kerry, there was no payments down there, I can assure you, and still isn't, I don't think.
Mick O'Dwyer is our guest. The book, by the way, is called Blessed and Obsessed, out a couple of years ago, but it's Mick's autobiography, and there isn't blood in his veins, there's GAA in his veins, and that's obvious, Mick, from the autobiography. But an interesting little sidestep, and a sidestep that you then sidestepped into politics. You considered it.
Well, I did. I didn't consider it myself, actually, but other people considered it for me.
Who was in your ear? Jackie Healy-Ray?
Would you believe it? He was to be my director of elections, actually, when I was supposed to go. I got to know the Haughey family pretty well, and the reason for that was I played on Jock, who was Padraig Haughey. He played right half forward for Dublin. I played directly on him at left half back on a number of occasions, and I got to know the Haugheys pretty well through that. And of course, when I was doing well in Kerry at the time, I had won 3 All-Ireland titles in a row and going for the 4th. I suppose Charlie said, there's a man that we might have a chance of being elected down there. So he sent some of his ministers down and then practically persuaded me to run for Fianna Fáil at that period. And I went as far as Killarney, would you believe it, on the day of the convention. So I went in and had a good look in there, and I said, when I was on my way in, I said, this is no place for me. I turned around and walked away.
Why?
I don't think politics would have been for me, to be very honest. I mean, it's a tough game, politics. I mean, everywhere you go, people are looking for this, looking for that, and you would have to be doing jobs that maybe you wouldn't agree with at times. Whereas I was involved in football and I had a good business going. I had a few hotels, a few pubs, and you know, and I had an undertaking business. I had a lot of stuff going on at the times which I wanted to promote, and I kept working at those businesses as long, which I did up to about 5 years ago. But overall, I had, to be very honest, I'm delighted now that I didn't get involved, because I'd nearly be up in Mountjoy with the rest of them now.
I was just about to ask if I stayed in there. Was it a decision you ever regretted? No?
No, never regretted it, I can assure you.
But you see, some of the things you've said to us this morning have been quite political. The pride of where you're from, talking about even the Chaplin Festival, which is gaining attention over the couple of years. You have the Waterfall crest on your shirt here this morning. The pride of where you're from, did you find that as a business leader, as a sports leader, as a community leader, that you could represent Waterfall better that way rather than go into that political game?
Well, I suppose I could have, all right, but we had a man down there at the time who was running, John O'Donoghue, who got elected after 4 attempts. So, I mean, he represented that area pretty well. So
you'd have done it after 1.
I know all about that.
Mick O'Dwyer is Yoda. If you want to keep these comparisons going, like, his legacy is going to be around forever. There's no question about that. It's more than 100, 200 years. Like, the legacy will be centered around him as a manager. But I think you alluded to this earlier on yourself, Gerard, that as a player alone, he would have had an unbelievable reputation, because he basically retired early from the game, had retired in the middle of his career, like Mick O'Connell did, by the way. He retired in the middle and came back to win 2 more All-Irelands. But Mick O'Dwyer broke both of his legs in 1964 and reinvented himself as a corner forward after being a wing back late in his career. And not only does he reinvent himself as a corner forward, he becomes the top scorer in Ireland on multiple occasions. He becomes the best corner forward in Ireland for a couple of years after breaking both of his legs. It's incredible, really. And then the turnover from playing to management is rapid fire. 1974, he stops playing. 1975, he's manager. Obviously, we all know the story of him legendarily giving youth its chance immediately and winning that famous All-Ireland in 1975. But that came from him being under-21s manager at the same time. And for the first 3 years, he won All-Ireland with them. So basically, Mick O'Dwyer didn't have a year where he wasn't involved in an All-Ireland winning team as a manager for about 6 or 7 years. So it's incredible, really, that the stat line as a player and manager, if we throw them all in together, it's 12 All-Irelands, 26 provincial titles. Of course, Kildare and Laois played their part in there. He has beaten every single county in Ireland as a manager of a team. And the stuff that kind of takes it to the next level, even in terms of being a legend, is whether it's Adidas or Bendix or Milk. Like, he knew the commercial potential of the GAA before many others did. Like, that Bendix ad is possibly the raunchiest thing to come out of 20th century Ireland. I'm not sure what society prepared for a lot of topless Kerry lads putting their jersey into a washing machine. Kerry is not known for being cool, but Mick O'Dwyer was the suavest man that the county has possibly ever produced. And he's still horrified by what happened in 1982. There's always a little wrinkle there, and that still gnaws at him.
What do you think about this, Kieran?
Yeah, like... Mikko, again, talking about a fellow who did it the right way. And he was more like Galvin did a fashion range on him. Like, his style from back then was, he was a stylish man. He was a classy man. And he was a baller. And he was, his own right, he said he was a power running half back. And after the accident, had to reinvent himself. And, you know, even some of his points he kicked, going out the field, little fist pumps to the crowd, little fist pumps to his teammate to get people going. You could tell he was a motivator from the very beginning. The way he managed that team, you know, was remarkable, really, because they were good. But you have to remember, it's like the Ferguson. I forget what's the lad that saved Ferguson's job that time when he got the goal.
Mark Robbins,
yeah. Like, to be honest, Mikko was under pressure after 77. You know, they were this load, winning loads of under 21s All Ireland. They'd won the All Ireland in 75, and then this Dublin machine kind of thumped them in 76 and 77. And you know, I'd say it's why he holds the Bomber in such high regard, because the Bomber did come in and change things. And you know, but I think Mikko. What Mikko did in Kerry as a player and a manager had him an iconic status in Kerry. But I think he came into more people's hearts with what he went on and did with Kildare and what he did with Laois. Like, winning provincial championships with them, taking them to All-Ireland finals, putting them on the brink, giving them the belief. And again, like, if you look at his management style, and I was down to him, I called him, I'd say, in October, I think. I was down in Waterville, and I just called over for a cup of tea to him. His house is a walking distance from my father-in-law's place. So, you know, and even then, he still talked about, like, you know, your team, get your team going. Like, be all about your team. Don't worry too much about the opposition. He goes, I realise now, in this modern day, you have to kind of know what they're doing, and you have to prepare for all that. I get all that. But he said the biggest thing is talk to your players about how good they are and how good they're going to play and what they're going to do, and focus on them on the day of the game. So it was something I took away going out of it, because I was just going in taking the college team that year. And look, as you know, as a player and a manager, and what he did, like, he won the O'Byrne Cup with Wicklow. I don't know that he had 100 people that wanted to come and play for Wicklow when he took them over. You know, of course, his training regimes were old school, but that's what he knew, and that's what he knew worked. So you can't blame him for not wanting to change. I know fellas have goals of him that his training wasn't. But what he was also doing, and I talked to him about this, because we did a run on a beach a number of years ago with Kerry, a kind of a balls to the wall kind of 8K run. And, you know, it was a race, and it was a mental challenge more than anything else. And the management sat up in the dunes as we went, like the clappers. And I brought this up to Mikko, and he said, like, you know, doing dim bits is no harm. He says, you'll find a few wasters, and you'll find the complainers, and you'll find the fellas who'll go to ground when the real shit hits the fan. And he said, you want all your tough fellas driving on, and even though they're wrecked in the run, that they keep powering through it and they keep just going, that they don't stop or they don't give up. Like, he said, keep an eye out for those fellas, because they're the guys who are going to let you down. And he said, the guys that keep going and the guys that run through the pain and the guys that do the hard training, and they're the guys that are going to be there when the chips are down on big days. But, I I think they'd have fun chiseling him in the wall, and I think, or chiseling him into the mountain, because he's an easy pick. And, as my mother said long ago, he was easy to look at too when he was playing and manager. So, and my grandmother said the same. So he had that about him as well, but a pure class act and very well deserving of being on Kerry's Mount Rushmore.
Yeah, people are going to wonder, is that Michael Fassbender up there? No, it's Mick O'Dwyer.
Welcome to Peloton, where change is a six-letter word that starts with you. But don't just be the change you wish to see. Work at it, run at it, lift at it, and even keep at it. With Peloton's all-access membership, you don't ever have to dip out on a workout, unless you're squatting. Track your progress, set pace targets, and if you're ready to lift, download the Peloton Strength Plus app.
Okay, this is the fun part.
This is fitness, but personal. So see you on the Peloton tread at onepeloton.com. Find your push, find your power. Peloton.
Psoriatic arthritis symptoms can be unpredictable.
I had joint pain, and I couldn't move like I used to.
I needed relief.
I got Cosentyx.
It helped me move better.
Cosentyx secukinumab is prescribed for people 2 years of age and older with active psoriatic arthritis. Don't use if you're allergic to Cosentyx. Before starting, get checked for tuberculosis. An increased risk of infections and lowered ability to fight them may occur, like tuberculosis or other serious bacterial, fungal, or viral infections. Some are fatal. Tell your doctor if you have an infection or symptoms like fevers, sweats, chills, muscle aches, or cough, had a vaccine or plan to, or if inflammatory bowel disease symptoms develop or worsen. Serious allergic reactions and severe eczema-like skin reactions may occur. Learn more at 1-844-COSENTYX or Cosentyx.com.
Ask your rheumatologist about Cosentyx.
Can I ask a question about Mick O'Dwyer as a footballer? Because I think it's part of his career and his talent that actually gets overlooked because he's such an important historical figure as a manager, one of the greatest managers of all time.
Mick O'Dwyer would never be overlooked. Now, the first mention I had of Mick O'Dwyer was an uncle, you know, he won the Munster Junior with Kerry way back, but he was a great judge of footballers. And before Mick hit the Kerry team at all senior level, my uncle, he was married to somebody from Valentia Island, Endemar. She stood for Mick O'Connor when he was baptised. But he saw a junior match the previous Sunday in Killarney, and he said, I saw a fellow playing that should be on the Kerry team. And the Kerry team meant the Kerry senior team. And he said, he's Michael O'Dwyer. Now, I saw him then. He was a person, he played football. He wasn't as noticeable as others. That often happens to people with black hair, which he had at the time. He was left half back. He was perfect ball players. He was a good player to use it. He was a great taking frees. He won four All-Irelands, two as a defender, two as a forward. He had a terrific career as a footballer. And then as a manager, you know, everybody knows what he did for Kerry. He was in Kildare. He was in Laois. To win a championship, a Leinster championship with Laois, the very first year he was there, he had this magic draw. He never had a lot of, you know, manuals or anything like that. It was all coming out of the head. And he had a great belief in what he was called the wire-to-wire across the field in Killarney. Touch the wire on both ends. Who gets there first? And it was nearly always a defender. But he was a great manager. And there were lots of other good managers as well. You could speak about Kerry sport forever. You wouldn't, nor would the audience, you know, tire of listening to this, that and the other.
We won the North Kerry League 1 year, and we were playing Douai and Ballylongford, and I scored 3-3 from half back.
You've never heard about this pass.
Oh, and I had a stormer.
We have another hour.
It's a pity it's not on YouTube. Maybe
we'll dig it out somewhere.
But I don't know what they did out in other towns, but that time to win a final, whether it was under 12s or 14s or 16s, you got to go in the car, and the car went around the town. And it blowing the horns, and there was a convoy of cars, and we'd all be out the windows with the jerseys and the cup. And that was part of playing football and wanting to win. But, of course, we were old enough anyway, and we were drinking. And we ended up in Thames, and so we had a few pints, and I ended up staying upstairs with Mike. And the next day, the Monday morning, of course, that's what you do, but you go back and...
The rollover.
We topped up. I remember at the bar, and I'm having a drink, and next thing, the horse slides in beside me. And I just kind of straightened up, and he says, Pat, he says, I haven't seen a performance like what you put in yesterday in a long time. He says, that was something else. And I says, yeah. He says, I'm thinking, he says, you should be in with Kerry. You should be on the panel. And of course, the chest came out, and next thing he went away. And I, you know, your chest is out, and Tim Kennelly says, I should be in with the Kerry panel. That was grand. I was having a drink, and he came back 20 minutes later, and the same story. He says, thinking more about that now. He says, you should be in with Kerry. He says, you're that good. He says, I tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to give you Mick O'Dwyer's number. And you go out and you ring him and you tell him. So I was only 18 years of age, and really. So at that time, you went out the back of Tim's pub, and there was the old phone.
Oh, the A and the B, put the money in. Yeah.
Press button A. So I dialed the number, and my heart was beating. I said, Mr. O'Dwyer answers now. And sure enough, he answered. And, hello? I said, Mr. O'Dwyer? Yes. I said, this is Pat Healy here from the Stall, Mr. O'Dwyer. How can I help you? I said, Mr. O'Dwyer, we won the North Kerry final yesterday. Oh, I saw that in the paper. How did you do? We were playing. I said, I was, Mr. O'Dwyer. How did you get on? I said, I scored 3-3 from half back. Jeez, he said, that's great. Fair play, Joe. What can I do for you? I said, no, I was just talking to a few of the boys there and Mr. Dwyer, and they said I should be in with Kerry, I should be on the panel. Who did you beat again? I said, we beat Dwyer, Mr. Dwyer. The next time Kerry are playing Dwyer, I'll give you a ring. And that wasn't too bad, but I had to come back into the bar, and the minute I walked through the door of the bar, the whole place erupted. And there was the horse and he above laughing.
Mikko was, I wouldn't say that he was the father figure I never had, but I worshipped the ground that he stood on, you know. And people will ask me, well, what was so special about Mikko? He was a man who gave me belief. He filled you with confidence, and he gave you a chance, and he left you off, and he left me off. And we were never critical. We never had a crossword. He never gave up to me. Myself and Bomber were his pets, maybe, perhaps, because Bomber was a sort of pet project to keep him fit and keep his weight down. And I was his pet project who was brought in because he knew what he saw of me. I'd run through the wall for Mika. You know, if he asked me to do 600 laps, I'd do 600 laps. So when it came to early season training and some of the lads, Body and the boys had put on a bit of conditioning, I would be brought in to act as the hair to run these lads and to speed them up and lose weight. So I was that for Mikko. But, you know, I've said it so many times that what Mikko brought to team talks became my philosophy in life. And it's simplistic, but it's something I say to business people or school children whenever I meet them. In Mikko's team talks, he never spoke about the opposition, and he never spoke about the opposition star players and how we could stop them. It was all about filling us with belief in ourselves, belief in our teammates, and away we went. And that was Mikko. Our glass was always half full. We believed. We never could see ourselves being beaten. We believed we could win every game, that there was no one could stop you. You were the best left cornerback. You were the best right halfback in Ireland. You were the best into field and London. And that was the attitude he instilled into us, which was absolutely brilliant. And it's an attitude I've carried all through life, that despite any setbacks or tragedies or upsets in life, my glass is always half full. I will always be positive. And that's thanks to Mikko. He was just an absolute, I just worshipped the ground. He was just brilliant.
Here is legendary Mick O'Dwyer. He was speaking to Máire Trasna Cailleag at Saturday night's tribute dinner to Micheálach Mór Hurtig. Enjoy this.
I was watching the documentary about you a few months ago, and obviously I've known you for nearly as long as I've been alive, or I've known of you. I suppose the question for me and for lots of people is, do you ever get tired of doing things, fundraising, campaigning, travelling?
Well, I mean, if fundraising for any society, any sort of, I think it's a good thing. And if I can help in any way, I think it's only right and fitting that I should. I got so much out of playing football with Kerry, and now that came from the club in Waterville. So that's the reason why I put so much back into the club again.
When we talk about money, obviously when we think of Mick O'Dwyer, we think of washing machines and sponsorship. It's moved on a long way now. Did you ever envisage the day that the way we see now, for example, Dublin, the massive sponsorship they have, did you ever envisage the day that this would be the way intercounty football and hurling would be?
Well, I suppose it started, and we were the team that really started it with Adidas, first of all, wearing Adidas, when it was the thing to be done. And then we did the washing machines after that. And from there on, the association took over then. And they have big sponsorship, though, as we all know. But it was all started way back at the small beginning. But it's no big stuff. And it's great to see the association getting so much money out of these big firms who have plenty of cash to spend. I think all the stronger counties who have been getting big money along the line should be curtailed now and cut down and put more money and more coaches into the weaker counties. I mean, if you want to improve all those counties, there's only one way you do that, by putting plenty of coaches, put them into the primary schools, and if you do that, you'll bring on your game.
Kerry is a county, obviously, very successful, but obviously demands in Kerry are very high. People expect a lot out of the Kerry football team. What do you think of the process that's going on at the moment to get a new Bainisteora on board?
Well, I suppose it's a tough job now, I can assure you. It's not alone a tough job, but it's a full-time job. I mean, if you really want to do a proper job, you must give it a lot of time. So managers are under fierce pressures now to produce the goods. And when you're in a place like Kerry, the demands are a lot bigger than most other counties. But I suppose we're hoping now that we'll get the right man in charge in Kerry and good management in there. And let's hope that we'll be back.
Have you enjoyed watching football this year, or were you maybe swayed by the hurling this summer? Because to me and to lots of others, it felt that perhaps the hurling is the one that took off this year and left football in its wake.
Yeah, well, I've always said it. Hurling is the greatest game on earth. There is no doubt about it. There isn't any other game to compete with it. And now there's about 8 counties that can win the All-Ireland title in hurling, which is great. So the aim now should be for this football to get up to the standards of that. At the present time in football, you have Dublin standing on their own. They're way out in front. But that will happen. You get highs and lows and valleys in every period. Dublin's day, it is their time now. But that will change in time as well. But there'll have to be a lot of work put in by the other counties to get to Dublin standard at the present time.
That's what I was just going to ask you. Like, everybody says the wheel will turn. I suppose at the moment it's very difficult to visualise how it will turn, because when you look at the Mayos, the Tyrones, the Kerrys, they'd be the ones seen to be kind of coming up in Dublin's wake, but there's still a huge gulf. I mean, if you were a manager of one of those counties, what could you do?
Oh, the only thing about it is you'll have to change the system, train harder maybe than they have been doing, put more work into it. See, Dublin have a big advantage. They can get their team together, I'd say, in an hour. They're all living around the city, which is very convenient. But most rural counties know all their players are away. They're in Dublin, Limerick, Cork. They're in the cities, and they have to travel back for training and all that type of stuff. So
that was something you were very good at, which was trying to make sure that the men you had playing for you, at the very least, had a job nearby, or that they wouldn't have to be travelling if they could help it at all.
Well, I mean, that's the first thing any Bainisteora will have to do when he's installed, is first of all go through all his panel and make sure that they're all set up in jobs of some reason or another within distance of training. And if you can do that, that's a big part of your job done.
We think of you, obviously, you're synonymous with success with Kerry, but you've also had success in other counties. And I always think of, I'm a Galway woman, I think of 1998 and what you managed to do with Kildare. But is that even possible today now for a team that wouldn't be up in the highlights, so to speak, to be able for a manager to come in and lift them and to bring them to an All-Ireland final? Is that day gone? Has the game evolved?
Well, I think it can be done, and I think I proved that when I went to Kildare. Just before I went to Kildare, Kilkenny had beaten Kildare in the O'Byrne Cup. So that'll tell you the standard and how low they were. But with a lot of hard work and a lot of coaching and training, We had a good standard there and we could quite easily have won that All-Ireland title. But we lost three of our best players on the run into that All-Ireland final. After beating the three previous All-Ireland champions, we had beaten Meath, Dublin and Kerry on the way through to that final. So that'll tell you, if you put in the work, it can be done.
Do you think even in today's modern age, because that was 20 years ago, do you think it's still possible today?
I think it is if you get at least 30 players who are willing to give a total commitment. Then it must be total. And if you get a total commitment, it's quite possible to do the very same. Dublin did it. And I mean, you put 15 men on the pitch at any time. But the thing to do is to get them into real shape. And the way Dublin have the advantage, as I said, they're all in and around the city. So we'll have to try and change the other system. We'll have to try and get work for our players in the county that they're from.
Welcome to Peloton, where change is a six-letter word that starts with you. But don't just be the change you wish to see. Work at it, run at it, lift at it, and even keep at it. With Peloton's all-access membership, you don't ever have to dip out on a workout, unless you're squatting. Track your progress, set pace targets, and if you're ready to lift, download the Peloton Strength Plus app.
Okay, this is the fun part.
This is fitness, but personal. So see you on the Peloton tread at onepeloton.com. Find your push, find your power, Peloton.